Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Zenith Bank PLC FY 2020 Investor Annual Conference. All participants will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions later during the conference. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero. Please note that this call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Ebenezer Onyango. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It is my pleasure to welcome you to our conference call, where we throw more light and answer questions and take your comments regarding our full year 2020 audited financial statements. On this, colleagues, we have Dr. Fashoranti, Executive Director, Dennis Olisah, Executive Director, Henry Oro, Executive Director, Felix Egbuh, our Chief Risk Officer, and Mukhtar Adam, our CFO. Gentlemen, 2020 was an extraordinary year, and radically so. 2020, we saw the COVID that hit the global economy with monumental disruption on public health as well as global economic activities. Nigeria wasn't an exception. In Nigeria, we saw the federal government commence the lockdown on 30th of April and the gradual of lockdown from 4th of May 2020. That led to us as an institution having of our business continuity plan, which necessitated a good number of our team having to work remotely from home. This was effectively and diligently carried out without any disruption on the flow of our activities. However, it's also important to state that as a result of the pandemic, the global economy witnessed shocks, contraction. Nigeria, we saw the economy contract by 6.1% in Q2, and in Q3, 3.62%. Fortunately for us, we've seen an exit of the country from recession in Q4, with GDP Q4 figure printing at 0.11%. However, the pandemic also led to a drop in commodity prices. In Nigeria, we saw food prices plummet, which constituted a threat to government and also a threat to the accretion to our reserve. Indeed, we opened the year 2020 with a reserve of $13.5 billion, and we closed the year with $35.4 billion 2020, translating to a decline of 8%. We also witnessed in the course of the year End SARS protests in October, which also to some extent crippled economic activities in several parts of the country. As a result of the pandemic, we saw an immediate and proactive response from the central bank that led to a round of initiatives that included some substantial stimulus packages to ensure that funding was made available to the health sector. There was 100 billion credit support for the health sector, 50 billion credit support micro-lending incentive. There was also the creation of 1 trillion naira manufacturing and agri support for the agri and manufacturing sector. Also, in the course of the year, the Central Bank of Nigeria, in conjunction with African Finance Corporation and the Nigerian Sovereign Investment Authority, established a $39.4 billion infrastructure development company. This is intended to provide the support and the backbone to address infrastructure support and funding and deal with the issue of infrastructure deficits in the country. In the course of the year too, we've seen monetary policy of the CBN take decisions that saw a reduction in monetary policy rates. In the MPC meeting of May 2020, was reduced from 13.5 to 12.5. and subsequently reduced in the MPC meeting of September to 11.5%. Cash reserve ratio was increased from 22.5% to 27.5% with effect from January 2020, while liquidity ratio remains unchanged. On the back of this very challenging situation and a serious impact on macroeconomy, I'm happy to announce to you that Zenith Bank Group recorded top-line growth of 5%, earnings moving from 662 billion to 696 billion. Profit before tax also grew by 5%, from 243 billion to 255 billion. Profit after tax also increased by 10%, from 208.8 billion to 230 billion. We recorded a loan growth of 19%, with our loan figures moving from 4 trillion to 2.9 trillion. On the back of this was also a substantial growth in our deposits, from 4.2 trillion to 5.3 trillion. I'm also happy to announce to you that our core business segments of corporates, commercial, SME and retail all recorded impressive growth despite the pandemic, while our key ratios remain very, very strong. Our expansion in the retail space and the massive deployment of our digital banking technology has also brought about substantially so in our retail deposits that grew by 55% from 1.1 trillion to 1.72 trillion. It's also important to say that Zenith Bank remains a very compelling investment position. Indeed, if you invested in Zenith Bank in January 2020, when the price was about 19 naira 25 kobo, as we speak, based on current dividend payout for the full year of 3 naira, and also the capital appreciation, you would have earned a substantial increase in wealth, a substantial increase in your investment by 552.2% in just 1 year. So, ladies and gentlemen, we'll have the financials all laid before. We'll create time for question and answer where we can throw more light into the key numbers behind our performance. So I welcome your questions at this moment.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touchtone phone or on the keypad on your screen. If you decide to withdraw the question, please press star, then 2 to remove yourself from the list. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then 1. The first question comes from Muyiwa Oni from SBG Securities. Please go ahead, Muyiwa.
Hello. Apologies, I was struggling with the Omni button. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Congratulations on your results, and thank you for taking the time to address some of our questions. Just the first for me is on asset quality. I was just wondering how we should be looking at asset quality for Zenith Bank, particularly around 2020 and for 2021. So if you look at your NPL ratio, it was flat year on year. However, stage 3 loans were higher, about 12%, were up about 12%. And in terms of contribution of stage 3 loans as a proportion of gross loans, it's around 8.7% in 2020 from 7.9% in 2019. And so when we look at stage 3 loans, you see some elements of deterioration. If you look at stage 2 loans as well, it's much higher, about 26% of loans versus 8, or almost 9% in 2019. So just wondering how one should be looking at NPL ratio relative to stage 3 loans, and then also going forward as well, how should we be looking at asset quality, particularly when you consider the restructured loans and how that could go going forward. And then on your e-banking revenues, just wanted to understand how to look at e-banking revenues going forward, particularly when one considers that part of the decline last year was because of the fee revision by the central bank. And so how should one look at e-bank revenues for 2021? And then on from your cost line, we saw a considerable increase in your IT expenses. Just wanted to understand what was driving that. And then also trying to understand how much of a savings you're able to derive from working from home. So remote working seemed to have benefited a few institutions last year. Wanted to understand how Zenith Bank benefited from that. I'll pause now for your answers and also allow others to ask questions as well.
Okay, thank you very much, Muyiwa. I think I'll take the questions regarding the asset quality, number one. Our assets will continue to remain impeccable. If you look at the numbers, notwithstanding the 19% growth in the loan book, our NPL remains flat. That's even taking into consideration the huge impairment that we also recognize this year in order to reflect the current uncertainty and the weak macroeconomic environment that we are operating. So we will continue to choose and pick the kind of risk assets we create. That has always been our culture, it's always been our style, and we don't see us compromising that. In terms of the restructured loan, we didn't have much of the loans being restructured. The critical part of what was done under the CBN forbearance was largely the public sector related loan, where the Central Bank of Nigeria gave an instruction or mandated banks to extend tenor and repayment and reprofile the repayment of those loans. But even at that, we've seen that the revenue accruing to states were not that impacted by COVID, because there was a kind of balancing coming from the fact that there was that still increased or helped to sustain the pool of funds available in the sector. I will leave our CFO to deal with the questions of the staging of the loans. E-business, e-banking revenue you talked about, yes, you are right. At the beginning of 2020, decline in the fees accruable to e-banking activities. Averagely, it came down by about 50%. So on the back of that, if you compare it with what we have, on a consolidated basis, we had a decline of about 30%. That decline of 30% is grossly below the CBN 50%. Again, if you look at the number in terms of volume of transaction, of course, we did more volume last 2020 compared to 2019. So I will say that unless we witness another further decline in the e-banking revenue, we expect that we should be able to achieve a growth on that line. IT expense, yes. IT expense is larger than normal for the following reason. One, 90 to 95% of our IT costs are foreign currency based. So the exchange rate movement meant that when you translate, it came to much higher than what we spent the previous year. That's one. Two, as we activated our BCP, we needed to do massive IT deployments. We needed to ensure that we enhance our cyber security. And ideally, what we do for our IT expense is to write them off over 3 years. But when we deal with certain core elements of IT security, we don't take them through 3 years. We take them on in the balance sheet right away. That's because of the very dynamic and steady and rapid nature of security expense that we need to incur. We have to make sure that we protect our network. We have to make sure that we control the remote access from everywhere. So online real-time, we're able to monitor. And I'm happy to say that we never had any glitch with respect to our... And we never had any fraud. Our firewalls, we had to renew and make sure that we got them elevated. Because within this time, when most institutions were working remotely, we saw a lot of threats in terms of network compromise. We saw a lot of issues regarding even internal compromises here and there. But in our own case our records remain quite impeccable. Then the other bit is that on the digital and the retail space, what we are doing now, what we did last year, was much more than what we did the year before. And for you to do that, you needed to commit to a huge IT expenditure. Again, some of the things we had to acquire last year, the good thing is that the lifetime is going to take us through the course of this year. We don't have to repeat that. So we expect a moderation in terms of the IT costs. Savings we achieved. Well, the savings we achieved, likely, if you look at it, businesses were still going on. Savings were around those four elements of traveling expenses, trading expenses, because we started doing things remotely. So those are the areas. If you look at fuel, because of the increase in energy costs, that's also the reason why that came up. But in terms of key areas where we achieve savings, they are not even so significant compared to the overall cost. I leave our CFO to deal with the questions on the taking of the loans.
Thank you very much, sir. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Muyiwa, thank you for the question on the stage 3 loans. I want to call your attention to the stage 3 loans you mentioned. If you do the effective on the stage 3, it's just about 5.7%. The NPL ratio is 4.29%. So they are very close. And I have explained over time that the NPL is based on NGAAP, which we have provided the reconciliation in the financial statements. So if you want more on our NGAAP, you can see the prudential reconciliation in the financial statements. But now, if you look at the details on page 81, part of note 3, you will see that our effective provisioning on stage 3 loans is about 65%, which is significant enough considering the high within the year we're operating. You mentioned stage 2 loans have grown. Yes, it has, because the risk environment has elevated. So certain loans, the nature of the industry they fall into, will naturally, looking at the industry, move. But the good thing is that those loans have very, very good collateral. And if you do the effective provision on the stage 2 loans, you get something around 8%, which means the collateral for those loans are very, very good. That is also on page 81. Then stage 1 loan, the effective impairment on it is about 1.5. So how do you have to look at our NPL? As the MD said, the NPL ratios, we are coming from a very high risk environment, and we are able to close with NPL 4.25%. Even if you take the worst case scenario and say you are using stage 3 loans, that's about 5.7%. Percent is still very, very, very decent compared to most banks, even globally. So that is what I have here. If you want to see more on our prudential reconciliations, you can check to see the details of our prudential guidelines at MPL. Thank you.
The next question comes from Adesoji Solanke from Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead, Adesoji.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes, we
can. Yes, but you can hear you.
Okay, super. Yeah, this is Adesoji from Renaissance. Thank you for the call. I have a couple of questions. The first one is, I'd appreciate if you could give some update on the central bank's plans to convert loans to the federal government to bonds, and the expectation that this could be passed on to the banks, perhaps by swapping some of your cash reserves for bonds. I'm just trying to understand where things are in terms of these conversations. What sort of yield do you think banks could receive if this does happen, and what sort of timelines could we work with? My second question is around credit growth for last year. Can you please clarify what drove the strong credit growth in 2020 and your expectations for credit growth in 2021? Then my third question is, if you look at page 107 in the PDF of your financials, in terms of how you reported your swap contracts of 440 billion naira, this is my understanding. So you borrow dollars, which is swapped for naira assets, which means you should be short dollars on the asset side, not long. So if I correct this by deducting the 440 billion twice to get you short dollars, your dollar assets should actually be 1.97 trillion with a net short dollar position of 147 billion. Can you correct me if I'm wrong? And if your balance sheet is actually short dollars, then shouldn't have an FX revaluation gain on your balance sheet positioning? So this is my fourth question. And my final question is just around borrowings. So on page 171 of your financials, you have something called due to banks for clean letters of credit of 579 billion. Can you give any sort of clarity as to, you know, who have you actually borrowed from here? And is this the funds you used for the swaps? And if not, what's the breakdown of how you actually fund your swaps? Thank you.
All right, thank you very much, Soji. I'm going to deal with the first one you mentioned. I'm not aware of a conversation from CBN to convert government loans to bond. That is, I'm just hearing about it from you for the first time. We haven't had such conversation at all. And until we hear it and see what CBN has in place, it's difficult for us to comment. But so far, it has never come up in any of the conversations that we've had from the central bank. In terms of credit growth, of course, we've recorded, mark you, even though we had first and foremost lockdown in economic activities, it was actually between the months of April to that's the month of March to May, and subsequently started picking up, even though on a muted level. So we've seen across different segments. But however, the key reasons are as follows. One, the dollar loans we had to translate at, whereas we carried the dollar loan at the rate of 360 at the beginning of the year, at the close of the year, the exchange rate was, the balance sheet was translated at 400. So the movement, that difference between 360 and 400, when you translate it on the dollar loan, that meant that the dollar portion of the loan book had to go up. Then we've also improved in terms of our retail loan. The retail loan, SME loans, so across the different segments of our market, we've seen some modest growth in terms of the loan book. I'll leave the CFO to correct the impression you have about our swap book and not advance with to our trade transactions.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much, Saji, for the questions. If you on page 108, as you mentioned, you have the swap contracts, right? Now, when we do swap, we give counterparties dollars and get treasury bills, which is naira-based, as a swap. So the treasury bills is sitting in naira. The liability that you used to get the dollars is sitting in dollar. So there is a currency mismatch. So for you to get the actual assets that you have, your total asset in both currencies correctly, you need to account for this. And that is the 440 that you see on the group. If you do that, you account for it properly, you are going to have a long dollar position of 1.2 billion on the bank and about 1.7 billion on the group. That is what gives rise. If you use that 1.2 billion, you check with the exchange rate movement within the year of the, you will get very close to what you have as revaluation gain. That's that. What we have on page 170 as due to banks are LC lines. That LC line has a corresponding fund that we are holding. So we have lines with several banks. that our customers have tapped in that lines and have used. So it's like against us, but we have the corresponding funds also sitting with us. So we are accounting for the two. You're seeing it here like something new. It used to report in other liability. Okay? But now we are putting it as part of our borrowing, a very short-term borrowing or a trading line. So that's what is happening there. I hope it's clear. Thanks.
Yeah, Mukhtar, thank you for the clarification. Just two things. Based on your immediate past comment, so can you clarify for the swaps, how do you fund them? Are they funded with domiciliary deposits? Do you fund them in borrowings? How do you fund them in terms of the source of the dollars? So that's one question. Then the second, just follow up on your explanation of the swap reporting. So technically, you are short dollars in terms of the swap transaction because you have converted dollars to Naira. You've got the Naira instruments on the asset side. So in actuality, you are short, not long, as the numbers are reported in the FX breakdown of the balance sheet. Is that correct?
It's not. We are long. I don't know how what you are trying to put together to say position. You know, you and I know, if it is short position, anytime exchange rate moves, we're going to have a revaluation loss. And I'm sure from the time we start monitoring our financials up to today, you have never seen a revaluation loss when exchange rate moves. So we are 1.2 on the bank, as I said, and 1.7 on the group. And I can provide further details as a follow-up question if you want. But what I've explained is how we have treated both the swaps, the Naira and the dollar. You need to appreciate how both of them are sitting on the balance sheet. And then you can understand why it's a long position. Okay? Then that's number one. What funds, what source of funds do we use for the swap? I mean, we have different sources of funding. We used to have some euro bonds that we have paid back some, the remaining. And then, you know, funds are fungible in treasury management. So we have different sources of funding that we use to fund our dollars. And we keep expanding the funding base.
Thank you very much.
Let me say that, Suji, further, if you look at our dollar position, it aggregate it, and decide to do the simple arithmetic of netting off, that's when you look at the total dollar liabilities, net off the total dollar obligations. That's the quick and simple what you have as a long dollar position. Thank you.
The next question comes from Ronak Gardia from EFG Hermes. Please go ahead, Ronak.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Ebenezer, Mukhtar, and the team. Thanks for the presentation and taking the questions. Three or four questions from my side as well. Firstly, maybe just as a follow-up of maybe what Soji was asking, on your trading income, could you just give a bit of granularity on the key drivers of the same? You know, how much of it was coming from FX swaps? How much of it maybe, you know, mark-to-market gains? And how much of it could be, you know, just conventional, just interest income from your investment securities held at fair value through the P&L? That's the first one. And then sort of as a follow-up to that, asset yield environment, what should we expect in terms of your NIMs and your trading income for this year? That's the second question. And then the third one is on your UK subsidiary. Given the sudden turnaround in yields we're seeing globally, especially in the US, what impact does that have on the funding profile for the UK subsidiary and generally the profitability? Because my understanding of the business model of that is, you know, it sources cheap liquidity from various sources and then invests in various instruments. So is that business model still sustainable given the increase in yields?
Yeah, thank you very much, Ronak. With respect to the trading income, It came from a combination of sources like you just mentioned. We are quite active. We have a very robust, profound, talented treasury team who can read the market and trade on the volatility. Well, bear in mind that Zenith has always been, we've been very strong and heavy when it comes to treasury. The challenges we see in the market, the changes in the market is not making us lose our profile. It's not making us lose our skill. Instead, we are having some refinement and, if you like, some sophistication being introduced into the trading. So we are getting a lot more in terms of both trading in bonds, in NTBs, as well as also a combination of the earnings we get from the swap. That's it. Asset yield. Yes. 8%. I think we closed with about 7.8%, notwithstanding the drop in the yield. You see, these things don't come easy. It's at the back of the ingenuity, you know, the creativity of the team. You see, I tell people that if you have the kind of team we have here, it's, failure is not an option for us. It's certainly not an option. We see our team double down in terms of negotiation, making sure that we have right and appropriate pricing for our risk asset. I mean, for me as the CEO and for my ESCO team, in a way, the doggedness and the passion of the team is an inspiration for us to continue to provide leadership. So that's why if you compare the drop in yield and our needs, you see that we've done very, very well. So what do we see as asset yields are picking up? We think we should be able to hit the 8% NIMS margin we guided last year. And we are going to repeat that together. We'll still continue to keep our eyes on the ball and make sure that, yes, we continue to negotiate effectively. Just as the deposit rates are going up, it's a challenge for us to make sure that correspondingly too, we reprice our loan. For as long as we can do it and do it in a most proactive manner, it's not for me to tell the market how we will do it intelligently. We'll do it to deliver value to the bank. UK subsidiaries, yes. At the onset of the COVID, especially, they suffered some mark-to-market losses in their trading books, but when the market rebounded, that got back immediately. The one other area where UK subsidiary was impacted was that we are equally heavy in terms of trade treasury. HQLA, we couldn't get outlet for them, but as yields are going up globally, we think there's an opportunity also for us to now go back into the treasury market and be able to invest in HQLA to improve the yield. But that's what we stand in. The UK subsidiary still made a profit for the year, albeit not as much as it was achieved in the previous year, but they contributed to profit. And let me say here that all the subsidiaries of the bank are contributing to the pool in terms of profitability and overall growth.
Thanks, Ebenezer. Just a follow-up or just maybe a final question. Your presentation gives very detailed guidance on various line items. Could you just give some guidance on what your expectations are for non-interest revenue this year?
I didn't get it. What are you asking about? Our guidance on revenue?
Guidance on non-interest revenue, because we can see the guidance for NIMS, asset growth, that kind of stuff. But what's the guidance for NIR?
Yes, let me get the CFO for that.
Okay, thank you, Rona. Non-interest revenue, although we have not provided guidance, but I can share some thoughts on what's happening. You will see that the net interest revenue is growing as a proportion to our overall revenue base. And what I can assure you is that it is going to continue to take more significant portion. In the investor presentation, we that shows the contribution of non-interest revenue to the overall revenue. And you can see that it has improved year on year. So the guide is that you're going to see non-interest revenue contributing more to the overall revenue over time. Meaning our retail banking that comes with a lot of fees and not interest businesses. So that is our guidance. It is going to be more, it is going to contribute more than it is contributing. And that has happened continuously. In the last 3 years, it has grown consistently. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Randolph Oosthuizen from Old Mutual. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Congratulations on a excellent result. Certainly, this time last year, or at the onset of COVID, we've been very pleased with this result. If we were told that that was going to happen, so well done. Just one quick question: other comprehensive income, the 16 value movements on equity instruments of 16 billion. Can you just explain, tell me where that's from? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for that question. The OCI is just the translation effect or the translation gain arising from the conversion of our investment in our investment is foreign currency. So the translation effect is that, I leave this here for to throw more light on this.
Okay, thank you, sir. You're right, the OCI has 16 billion year on year. Two things have contributed to that. One, the investment we have, the investment itself, the fair value of the asset appreciated. Number two, the investment is dollar denominated. So the translation effect of the dollar contributed to the gain in the OCI. Thank you.
Sorry, Randall, can you please repeat that?
No, I just want to know what is the investment.
Oh, you want to know what is in the investment?
Mm-hmm.
I think if you go to note, I think if you go to note 10, you will see that we have a breakdown of those investments on income. The note on other income, page 143.
See.
Note 10. We have made detailed disclosures of that. If you have the financial statements.
Yes, now I have it. I'm just trying to understand what is the investment? Is it a shares in a company, or is it, what is it?
Yeah, it's an equity investment. Mm-hmm. We actually said the note there, it's saying that the revaluation gain is not.
Well, one of such investments is our investment in African Finance Corporation. African Finance Corporation is a dollar balance.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, just another reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star, then one. The next question comes from Lanme Buluro from CHD. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Hi, Ebenezer and Mokhtar. Good performance. I missed all the chaos that we all went through last year. The e-income, can you just help us provide some more clarity around that drop? I mean, it's quite, I know you mentioned your volumes were up, but that 36% drop was quite huge. Also, I saw on the deposit side, your CASA crossed over 70%. I think it's the first time in almost 8 years. you've had such a very strong performance, and you know, how sustainable is that? Should we expect this to be the trend going forward? Then an update on your retail strategy. How has it been? And also outlook for 2021. And finally, you know, you're well capitalized. I mean, I'll probably say you're super capitalized. I mean, don't you think maybe it's time to maybe have that really good dividend payouts, over 60%, 70% dividend payouts, and reward your shareholders? Because I think, you know, and then I also would aid your ROE, you know. So it's something that I know, what's the view internally around that? Because, you know, your balance sheet is very strong. And I think it'd be nice to have that big payout, or, you know, maybe a special dividend for investors. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Larry. Let me begin with the last question. If you notice, the dividend payout this year, we've moved from 2 Naira eating cover to 3 Naira. Yes, we are super capitalized. But however, we live in very uncertain times where you have radical exponential disruption. We can't tell what will happen tomorrow. So we still think it is important for us to keep this buffer in order to deal with any extreme shock that will come up. So, of course, we'll continue to reward our shareholders. But let's make sure that within this period, let's see how we transition completely out of COVID and getting back to life as usual or normal. Then we'll be able to make certain calls regarding whether to increase the dividend payout. But now we need to strengthen our institution. This is the time for us to grow stronger muscles to be able to withstand whatever strain or stress that could come up in the market. Retail strategy. What do you want to hear from us in retail strategy? I can't begin to announce to the world what I'm doing. I'm sure, Larry, you won't want me to announce, but take it from us that we are massively increasing our footprint in the retail space. We've announced our presence. We are making the right call. We are making the right investment. We are very impressed with the feedback we are getting. You see, again, bear in mind that Zenith is seen as an aspirational brand. Before, we were not in retail, but now that we've announced, the appreciation, the reception from the market is overwhelming. It is overwhelming. So it is just left for us to accelerate that deployment. It's a space we've taken our space, and we want to run it, we want to lead it the same way we've led our institutional and corporate banking business. E-income, we've talked about it earlier. We can reduce the income fees and income on electronic banking by average of 50%. So if you compare that with the 30% drop, that will explain to you that, yes, indeed, we were able to cover up 20% from the improved earnings. Otherwise, on a straight line basis, one would be expecting that our income should have dropped by about 50%. So I think on the CASA, let me leave the CFO to speak on that.
Okay, thank you, Larry, for the question. The CASA, I think you should be applauding us in the CASA, because if you look at our savings, the savings account has grown significantly year on year, and it will continue to grow. When we started the CEO's opening remarks, he mentioned the extent of investments we have made in IT and various digital channels. Those are the things that have resulted in savings accounts and retail accounts growing significantly, because people are able to do banking with us from without having to come to the banking hall. It's easy, seamless, building up savings accounts significantly. You also know that because of our strength on the corporate side, the current accounts of the corporate will just continue to grow. That means that we are able to reduce our cost of funds, which you can see in the reduction in cost of funds and reduction in interest expense. So it's working for us. We continue to re-strategize and invest more in those platforms that will overall reduce our cost of funds and improve our profitability. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Afolabi Lawal from Lekki Cooperative Society Limited. Please go ahead. The next question comes from Gloria Fadipe from CSL Stockbrokers. Please go ahead, Gloria.
Good afternoon, everyone, and congratulations on your numbers. I joined in a pretty late, so I may be asking some questions that have already been answered, but just a bit of clarity, one on the CASA increase you just mentioned. I want to assume that this must have come from the huge OMO maturities we saw last year, which are sitting in many of the banks' current and savings accounts. And since we don't expect those huge maturities this year, I will expect that we should see all of that taper down a bit. And then, two, on asset yield, I know the NDA has said a bit of ingenuity, which I congratulate you on, but I just want to wrap my head around how banks are sustained to this yield amidst the very low yield environment. So if I look at your books, almost half of your earning assets shouldn't be yielding much from what I see, because I see a lot of huge balances in treasury bills, and then CBN is keeping so much in TRR. And so I just need to, just a bit of clarity on how those yields are being sustained at the levels they are being sustained at, and how to look at it this year. I'm over the top of my head, I think that things should improve this year, but just a bit of clarity on what. And then the T-bills, are those, the increase we saw, is it from the swap position Mukhtar spoke about earlier? And then finally, on impairments, I know loans were restructured last year, and I know you said that public sector loans were the major ones that were restructured. But for the loans that were restructured, are you seeing an improvement in the books? And should we be expecting some deterioration this year? Because what I ordinarily would factor into my estimates is that we should expect some form of deterioration. The macro condition has been down for a while, so we should expect some form of deterioration this year. Am I in the right direction, or what are your thoughts around that? And then finally, a few of your peers have been looking at the HoldCo license. Is there a chance that Zenith at some point will start thinking of that too? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Gloria. First is that formal maturity has no impact on CASA. Formal maturity only impacts your liquidity, because the deposit is already there anyway. Before you go on, if I get a deposit from a customer today, it sits in my book as a deposit. The next thing is, what do I do with the liquidity? Is it sitting ordinarily as cash? I apply the liquidity either to create a loan, or I can invest it in OMO. So OMO maturity has no impact on your CASA, as it were. It just impacts your liquidity. And in the current dispensation, we think, yes, maybe what you may want to say is when that maturity happens, the CRR, but that's something for another day. The corporate yield, see, this is our work. I can't wake up today and tell you I'm a surgeon. I'm not a surgeon. I'm a banker. We've done this over the years. Zenith is 30. We'll continue to lead in this market. We are not just the 390th bank in the globe just for nothing. And the ninth in Africa, the leading bank in Nigeria, it comes with some ingenuity, it comes with some skills and talent. See, these are things that are inherent in the system. The values already inhibited in the system, the values created, they are such that, you see, in some ways I say it's like a set menu. There are certain things you can take, certain decisions, the system will even object it. So how we do that, how we create it, is our work. To do it, trust us to do it, just keep investing, but just be rest assured that in terms of returns, we will deliver. HoldCo, we are considering our options. The most important thing for us is that we need to grow our business. We must grow business. How we grow it, if it's organic, it is going to be HoldCo, we kept on saying the fact that we will not do a deal for the cosmetic of announcing a deal. We will do a deal because there is value to be created. There is synergy, there is alignment in terms of our structure, the way we do things. Therefore, we keep our options open. And I was also said to analysts like you too, if you find a deal, you can let us know. We'll see whether it makes sense or not. We are quite open. Our options are very much open. But in fact, I'll leave Dennis, Lisa, to take you to answer the question on impairment.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. On the issue of impairment, please be rest assured that as a bank, our eyes is on the ball 24/7. Our loans are very, 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 very good. Security is not in doubt. And here in an environment, you and I know that for Zenith Bank, we like to play amongst the best. So, the corporate names that we all know, we still have loans in their names, and those loans are very, very secured, and they are doing well. We will not just, for the sake of growing the balance sheets, do loans at all. Please be rest assured that you won't see any deterioration in effect. We will do our best to continue to maintain a good record we've always had over the years. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Timothy Wombo from APSA. Please go ahead, Timothy.
Thank you. Thank you, and good afternoon, President and TFNA, for taking my questions there. My first question is regards to the improvement we saw in your NPL and cost of risk. So at half year, you've given us much higher guidance on your NPL ratio and the cost of risk. What observations did you make to inform the reduction that you've reported at full year? That's the first question. The second question, you say that you don't want to divulge much on your retail strategy, which I totally understand. But if you could just help me understand, I saw you grow your customer numbers by 4 million, roughly about 4 million. If you could maybe give me a sense of which geography this is. Is it within Nigeria only? And also maybe the demographic that you've managed to, to really attract. Third question, we've seen the removal of prices. And when I look at your OPEX, I can see that fuel and maintenance is the third largest cost item. How do you see this playing out? Are you looking to, manage that going forward, just to get a sense of that? And then just lastly, please explain the drop in your credit fees, which has still declined as well. Thank you.
Thank you for those questions. I'll get Chief Risk Officer Felice Mount to take the ball. Let me say that some of those questions were not really audible, but I hope Felice got every part of them. Yeah, let's go ahead.
Thank you very much. Your question on the NPL and the cost of risk is what I'll take. Clearly, at the time we advised the guidance mid-year last year, the uncertainty in the environment was still very high. So, expectedly, there were still concerns about how the NPLs would print and how the cost of risk will look like at the end of the year. But thankfully, I think by the third quarter, it was clear that certain actions that have been taken is beginning to get a better position and clarity on how we will end at the end of the year. And the actions we have taken to manage those accounts were of great help. So, expectedly, at the end of the year, risk, which we have every stage, to come to about 2.0%, we were able to push it down to about 1.5%. Of course, as you well know, quite a lot of actions went into dealing with that. Mota had talked about some of the actions also to be dealing with NPLs. I think the issues for us around NPLs, the quality of collateral that we hold, and how that plays out in determining what our final NPLs are. So, that's essentially what will guide you on what our guidance was at mid-year and what our final figures were at the end of the year.
I think there was a question.
There's a question on the geography and the sources of income. Well, let me say that primarily, Nigeria remains the hub. And we've seen about 82% of the income coming from Nigeria. And actually, it's 84% if you use the PAT. It's 4% from Nigeria. And we are seeing from the subsidiaries, I think I would rather take it on the subsidiary level, the rest. Like I said earlier, all the geographies are delivering something to the port, which is most important. So they are not, they don't need any subsidy from the center to operate. So what we have is to keep driving up the number. In Ghana, we are one of the leading banks in the country. And if you look at the performance, you see that we are inching up in terms of our rating. Gambia is the same. Sierra Leone, in all of them, they recorded year-on-year growth. They recorded year-on-year growth. Of course, I talked about UK contributing inside of the, in spite of the very harsh impact of the COVID in that geography. So we are happy to say that the subsidiaries are doing well. If you look at other non-bank subsidiaries, Zenith Pension, the leading pension custodian in the market, they are contributing. Our nominees that were set up, the baby of the group, ago, in their own way too, they are not getting subsidy from us. They are picking their bills and putting something in the pot at the center.
Just to help you, if you go to page 151, you will see the condensed results that summary of their performance is presented. You clearly see that all of them are making profit, as the CEO has said, and you will also have an idea of their balance sheets. Thank you.
Can you hear me? I just wanted to clarify my question. I was asking about the growth in your retail customers. Rather, the growth in your customers. I saw that your customers grew by about 4 million. So I was asking, in what geography has this growth come from? Is it purely Nigeria? And also, I wanted you to shed some light on the demography, you know, in terms of is it the youth, is it the, you know, the age who have joined as customers? That's what I was actually asking. Sorry for the breakup in communication.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll leave Tope to answer that question.
Okay, so thank you. Let me say that we've spoken a lot about our retail strategy, and one of our strong focus on that strategy is to onboard customers. We have done a lot in that regard. We have about 8 channels of customer onboarding that have led to a very significant growth in our customer base. It's all part of our retail drive, and our focus will continue to be on this. So you will see more in this regard. Thank you.
Okay, let me further say that in terms of geography, it covers every segment. If you look at the entire strata of the retail banking segment, we cover all of them. And we are launching our open banking. In fact, we've launched the open banking, which will enable us to expose all our digital products and services to the market, especially with the fintech, so we can do faster integration in a very agile manner. We are one of the early banks to launch a quick response code, which is also an improvement in terms of the payment system that will enable our customers be able to make payments effortlessly. So, like Dr. mentioned, the channels are there. No matter who you are in the society, there is that digital touch point for you to do business with Zenith. Even if you are in the remotest location, for as long as there is telephone connectivity, you can do the unstructured universal service data account opening, which you do with a features phone. Then, even if it's not there, we will have agency banking. So we have the third point to provide for the different segments of the retail market. So our coverage is total. There is no exclusion. It's no one will be left behind in terms of our retail focus.
Thank you. The next question comes from Simeon Ebuchidi from FEE. Please go ahead, Simeon. Simeon, you may proceed with your question. If your phone is muted, please unmute your phone so that we can so that you can pose your question. Unfortunately, we cannot hear anything from Simeon's line. We have a follow-up question from Adesoji Solanke from Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead, Adesoji.
Yes, hi, there. This is Adesoji once again. Just a few follow-up questions. The first one is, on page 17 of your slides, you have something called agency and collection services. Can you talk more about what you've been doing here? I mean, how many agents do you have now? How do you roll them out? Are you deploying your own POS machines? Are you rolling out your own branding? What exactly are you doing there? My second question is just to understand what's your house view around the outlook for interest rates and the exchange rates and the drivers of your outlook. And thirdly, on asset quality, can you speak about areas where you are seeing some stress? And for your oil books, considering, if I recall correctly, a number of your hedges should have matured last year, are you now buying or asking the clients to buy new ones? Or what, you know, what conversations are you having around hedges nowadays? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Soji. I'll leave Henry to deal with the question on the oil hedges. I think the other question you asked is it the outlook on the foreign exchange? Yeah, the outlook in terms of foreign exchange is good for us to look at certain key perspectives as they are beginning to unfold. Yes, we've seen as a reserve move from 38 to 35, but it's good to look at certain commendable actions that the central bank is taking to see the revamp and restructuring of the IMTO business. And what we've seen so far is that we are beginning to see increased flows coming into the market from IMTO that we were not seeing before. So, the initiative from CBN, the initiatives in terms of the IMTO flows are now being plugged. So, those flows are coming and steadying. Before, we had like an unstructured system for IMTO that somebody wakes up somewhere. I recall that there was a particular company somewhere in Europe that said, look, deposit, you can do transfer with us and receive money anywhere. And mention our name. Meanwhile, they have no, they didn't have any agreement between us. So, a lot of people were just waking up, set up a money transfer system, have a way of you dealing with the dollar. But now, all that is coming into the market. That's one. Two, CBN has also looked at the exports business. We've seen situations do export, don't repatriate the export process. You will recall that earlier in the year, CBN made a pronouncement that if you don't repatriate your export proceeds within the allowable time, there's going to be heavy sanction. And Soji, I tell you, since policy announcement, we've seen increased inflow in terms of repatriation of foreign exchange earnings from the exporters. If you look at that, these are positive development. The third one, which is even the biggest, is the fact that oil price is recovering. Oil price recovery at 67. Before COVID, we never saw $7. Where in the course of last year, we never saw $7 oil. I hope I'm right. But $67 oil, just 1 year of the anniversary of COVID, that's some remarkable recovery. And we think, we hope it's sustained. What does that mean for us? To say, look, back out the OPEC production cut of 25%. If you back that out, the 25%, that will give you effectively maybe something in the region of about maybe 50s or so. However, what that means is that increased oil price means there is more accretion into the reserve. If we have this accretion into the reserve, for us, exchange rate at the current level where it is, looks like something that appears, what we say, appropriate. So, say, we expect that there will be more dollars available to do business over time. Over time, and as a result, we don't see extreme volatility in terms of exchange rate compared to where it is. But looking at where it is, what we'll be saying, again, remember to asset yields have improved. While FPIs over the in the course of last year, FPIs kind of withheld from doing additional business for the country. But now, given where we are, it's like a welcome development for FPIs. If you come in, you get your 1 year old bill at 10%, decent when compared internationally, for as long as exchange rate, you don't suffer volatility in the exchange rate. So I think we appear to be in a stronger, better place than we were at the heat time of the COVID. So our projection would be that there's no crystal ball for us to look into, as it were, but based on what we see in terms of the positive and the tailwind, we think things will be moderately even. I will leave Henry to deal with the question on the oil hedges. Tokwe will deal with the agency banking. And while Dennis deals with asset quality.
All right, thank you, Soji, for the question. You're right. For us, for our upstream assets, we always ensure that there is hedges to provide protection and to mitigate against rising oil prices. And for most of our clients, some of them go for 6 months and thereabout, and they mature at different times. We also ensure that as this is mature, we give local, that we ensure that some of these contracts are renewed at maturity for different tenure. So we'd like to assure you that for all of upstream assets, there's sufficient hedges and they are renewed as they mature on a continuous basis.
Okay, before the question, let me further say that yes, we've renewed the hedges even before the uptick we saw in the price. As soon as they matured last year, we did. But what we are even doing with the rally we see, we are ahead. We are ahead so that we can push further, you know, that downside protection to move in tandem with the upward movement in crude price. The way it is, it's a lot cheaper for you to now start protecting the downside at, say, levels of the high 50s and the early 60s. But with prices before below 60, you couldn't do that. You are going to pay too much gain. So we are in a comfortable place to further strengthen the oil and gas and make sure that we have appropriate hedges that will protect the downside. So Topa will take on the agency banking.
Okay, thank you, Soji. On agency banking, let me say that we launched the agency banking platform in June 2019, and we did this specifically to push retail banking solutions, you know, to the unbanked, and in addition to support the financial inclusion drive of the central bank. And I can say that between 2019 and 2020, we have seen significant growth in the value of transactions. We've seen significant growth in the volume of transactions. Very, very significant growth. And we've seen our agents grow also across the country. And we're seeing banking services, you know, go to areas where before now had no access to banking services and solutions. And we're using technology to drive this. So that is the, you know, the banking growth, the income is as a result of this drive. With this, we continue. We're working, again, like Graham that earlier said, with the investment we made in IT, we're going to see a lot of more growth in this regard. So the future, it's a lot of agency banking. Thank you.
On the issue of asset quality, at the beginning of the pandemic, there was a lot of fear and apprehension around certain sector. The first one being public sector. The second one was transportation, actually. The third one, hotel and tourism business. From the public sector, essentially was that revenues are going to state government as well as other public institutions. We're going to, because of the Green Link, revenue generated by oil sales. But that one actually didn't happen materially because with the devaluation, terminal adjustment of the value of the naira, amounts accruing to state governments actually remained a little bit. So the differential really was not anything to write about. Yes, transportation, we saw some stress because there was complete lockdown for a very long time. But since the lockdown been eased, movements have started across boundaries. Then those companies started getting revenue as well as improved businesses. Hotel and tourism is a little low for now. But the truth of the matter is that in our books, our exposure to that sector is not really significant. Thank you.
Yeah, let me say that in terms of transport, I think the total exposure is hotel and tourism, maybe not up to 400 million. So we don't see any trend there. And you know, over the years, there have been talks about or concern on certain sectors. One of them was power. I remember 2013, as soon as we did power, everybody else did power, they come out on clutches. That never happened. Right now, with credit to central bank, there have been a reform in the power sector that has seen some differential pricing in terms of the tariff, putting more money in the coffers of the DISCO. The DISCO's been able to ramp up means that the DISCO's can now settle the debt much more than they were doing before. So, for the DISCO's funded, repayments are up to date. The GENCO's, what we are seeing is improved collection that will be due to them under a properly reinforced arrangement. We've also seen CBN in the course of improving the revenue due to DISCO, providing some form of funding support for the deployment of that. The first phase is on. There's going to be second phase. It's going to be a situation where it will be different for all. So these are initiatives that should improve power. So the concern about power, I would say, with credit to CBN, power sector is being strengthened. The other sector that we had concern, yeah, everybody said there's going to be blowback because it was as if as soon as we did the IOC asset sale, it was as if the market moved against us and we faced a decline in the price, in the commodity price. But however, we are, you know, it's like when you are in the midst of a storm, the first thing is survival. And when you have that survival instinct, you are looking for how to navigate. Somehow we have managed to navigate, we will continue to navigate. And where we are, with everyone now knowing that yes, there's hedges that can be put in place, no matter how small, no matter the tenor, the fact that it's run, it provides some protection. Price rallying too will also help us in terms of our collection, it will strengthen and we'll see improvement. So, but however, nobody can tell what will happen tomorrow. The most important thing for us is to ensure that when we see extreme factors, when we see volatilities, we move quickly to dimension what the volatility is about, what are the key drivers. And that informs us in sitting down to find out how to deal with it while talking to our obligors.
Thank you. The next question comes from Olusola Joseph Awelelwa from NLPC PSA. Please go ahead. Olusola, you may proceed with your question. If your phone is muted, please unmute your phone so that we can hear your question. Unfortunately, we cannot hear anything from this line. The next question is a follow-up from Ranak Gadia from EFG Hermes. Please proceed, Ranak.
Hi, sorry, I broke up for a few seconds. My question is on deposit growth. I see on your slide you are factoring in deposit growth around 10%. I just wanted to know how feasible that is, because last year, you know, Zenith Bank and the system in general attracted a lot of liquidity from institutional investors due to the change in OMO regulations. Given that these investors are now seeking investments elsewhere through T-bills and whatnot, isn't there a scenario that the overall deposits for the system could decline this year?
Thank you very much, Rona. I think what we need to bear in mind is the fact that Nigeria is a huge market. Country of 200 million. And we tend to undermine the strength of the economy, which is what we, all of us need to start changing the narrative. Because we have what others don't have, the market. If we look at the initiatives being pursued by CBN, and to some extent the fiscal authority, everything is geared towards promoting growth in the economy. And remember too that deposit mobilization is also transactional. And what we are seeing is that there's an acceleration in terms of expansion of credit to the retail and the SMEs. So the fact that you have that retail loan expanded, then what do you expect? The deposit we have will be expanded. The financial inclusion agenda to bring in the unbanked, which we are also pursuing through agency banking, is also promoting growth. It's going to promote deposits. And if we have also saw the country come out of recession so quickly in Q4, well, although with cautious optimism, we think, you know, activities will begin to pick up. Even if it's going to be tough, we do the heavy lifting. That is our job. You see, nobody is ever promised tomorrow. When the pandemic broke, when we were doing this call about this time last year, we didn't know about pandemic. When the pandemic hit, you know, we were looking at it, but see, one thing is, you change not because you simply want to change. You change because you want to survive. So that survivor instinct drives us. It drives us that we expect that no matter what, we should be able to grow the deposit base. It's going to be difficult, but yes, we are not going to do very little things. So we'll be able to achieve it. That is the mandate we are giving the market, and we think it's achievable.
The next question comes from Oyinkan Ogunbemil from RMB. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Congratulations on your results. I just wanted you to please speak a bit more about your Stage 2 loans. I know you said the effective coverage of 8%, but then I look at the fact that you increased your impairment charge on the P&L significantly. So I'm just wondering, should this coverage be a bit low at 8%, considering your view on the operating environment by increasing your impairment charge? Thank you.
Okay. I leave the CFO to answer the question.
Thank you very much for the question. As I explained earlier, the Stage 2 loans has increased. The gross amount that has moved from Stage 1 to Stage 2. That is, we have adequately accounted for the elevated risk environment there. So the next question is to do the impairment charge on them. In doing the impairment charge on them, you have to consider the collaterals that you are holding, the MPVs of the collaterals, the recoverability of the collaterals, the time it's collaterals. If you put all these things together, that will determine the amount of impairment you're going to have. So if you have a lower impairment on the Stage 2 loans, what it means is you have a good quality collaterals for those categories of loans. So your impairment will be low. Despite having good collateral, we still went ahead to say this has to be Stage 2 and it has to be Stage 2 to properly account for the elevated risk environment. So what should you expect going forward? The amount of impairment you should expect is a function of the industry, the customer, and the collateral we are holding for the various exposures we have. So in our own way of trying to ensure a very reasonable cost of risk, we determine suitable collaterals, and we measure a money. There is a need for us to ask for more collateral to cover our position. We do that, and we ensure we have appropriate documentation to cover us. Yeah. Thank you.
Due to time, the final question we can take is from Timothy Wambu from APSA. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Just to ask this question, I don't know what was answered before. I wanted to understand the reason for the drop in your credit related fees, despite the growth in loans. Second question is on what sort of deposit mix by client are you working towards? I've noticed that your retail deposits have been growing as a proportion of total deposits. I can see now it sits at 32%. what ideally are you targeting? And then lastly, any concerns with the removal of the fuel subsidy on your fuel and maintenance costs in your OPEX? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I think I only got the first question, so I'll leave my colleagues to answer the other one. I'm sure they had a clear idea of that. Is on the drop in credit-related fees in spite of loan book. Let's explain it here. The growth in the loan book, part of it came from the translation effect of the dollar-related loan. Therefore, an existing dollar loan in the books that we translated at 360, end of the year we translated at 400. So, there are no, for an ongoing loan, you are not going to attract fees. So, the fees you see there relate to fresh disbursement which, and maybe renewal fees within the period. And bear in mind that we were in a COVID environment where asset yield dropped as aggressive as we are with respect to fees on facilities. So that reflects essentially the market dynamics. So the other question, I don't know if you don't mind, can you repeat the questions?
The second question I was asking was what ideal client mix of deposits are you working towards? I'm mostly looking at your retail deposits, which continues to grow as a proportion of your total deposits. So what are you working towards? I can see it was at around 32%. It's grown from 26% in 2019. And that question is, any concerns given the removal of fuel subsidy on your OPEX, given that I can see that fuel and maintenance is one of the large components in your OPEX part. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Dennis will deal with the issue on the deposit mix, and Tokwe will also deal with... Tokwe will deal with the deposit mix. Dennis will deal with the fuel, the impact of the removal of the fuel subsidy.
Okay, I think we said it before that on the deposit mix, we saw a very massive growth in savings. Savings contributed a lot to that, and that's as a result of what we're doing in the retail space, where we focused a lot on customer onboarding across the various channels, and that significantly grew our savings. And going forward, we'll be playing more in that. We're going to get more innovative on the digital platforms. And we are also, I mentioned earlier on the agency banking, another very major source of spread for us when it comes to expanding our retail platforms and footprints. Other things we're doing, digital loans, where we are, customers can actually access loans by dialing the USSD digital code. And in less than 5 minutes, you know, they disburse the loan. So basically, to expect to see more innovations, and this will drive further what we're doing in the space. Going to grow, customer numbers will grow, and that also drives our card issuances, and in addition, our enrollment on channels. So that's the way forward for the retail. Hopefully, we'll see more growth in that regard. Thank you.
The removal of the fuel subsidy actually is a national issue. But as if we ourselves had an idea that some of these things will come up. As a bank, we've already embarked on the construction of a massive energy center, which will essentially be using gas to provide electricity for all of us. That essentially will be the cost of energy going forward. This energy center will start production hopefully in the second half of 2021. In addition to that, cost savings is actually one of our focus is 2021. So whatever it is that needs to be done, ensure that we reduce energy consumption, either by way of reducing fuel, unnecessary fuel burning, unnecessary use of unnecessary movement, as well as renewable energy sources. Solar panels, with due respect, the value, the cost of solar panels are coming down gradually. So we are seeing ourselves also migrating some of the operations, the powering of branch operations, to solar rather than use the conventional energy sources. These, I think, to a large extent, will ameliorate the rise that we'll see in the cost of fuel. Thank you very much.
And let me say that Zenith Bank is one of the signatories to the United Nations Program Finance Initiative. And by us being a signatory to this initiative on principles of sustainable banking, we've committed to checkmate our carbon footprint. So the Energy Center Dennis talked about will serve the head office and the locations we have in Victoria Island, and we'll see at the end of it, we should be able to disable not less than 30 generators. So we have that central power. Then in the branches outside Lagos and all over the country, we have installed solar panels. So at night, we don't have need to run the generators when power supply from the main source goes off. We fall back on our solar panel. All our ATMs across the country, at least 95% of our ATMs are powered by solar panels. So, as then, given the COVID environment, even though we are recovering, we don't also have been traveling from point to point as we've continued to engage remotely. So, we expect that our fuel and energy consumption should go down this year. It should go down this year, as soon as, especially with the expected activation of our energy center.
Thank you. Due to time, we cannot take any further questions. Ebenezer, can I hand back to you for closing comments?
Okay, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for the very insightful questions. And in closing, we like to assure you that we will do all that is possible to ensure that we continue to deliver superior performance. And it's important for us to also look at certain emerging scenarios in the market that we see. The most important of them is the exit from recession in Q4. The expectation is that there will be some growth in Q1, no matter how muted that growth will be. We've also seen from the GDP fourth quarter report, we've seen improvement coming from agri and the service sector, especially ICT. So the agri sector improvement shows or confirms the impact of the various initiatives that the central bank has been pursuing with respect to supporting agri. And once that is sustained, we expect that improvement in agri should come in to deal with food inflation. Is also a major positive for the country. Improving asset yield and with the expected improvement in terms of the supply of foreign exchange should be a welcome idea for foreign portfolio investors to take another look at the country and come back in because are now much higher than we saw before. Then there is also the upcoming legislation that on general standing instruction with respect to loan recovery. So the fact that we are going to get a parliamentary tip to that should also improve our loan recovery and also encourage banks to do incremental lending. There is also the expected commencement of the African Continental Free Trade Area, which should see improvement in intra-African trade. Indeed, it is said that intra-African trade by now is about, at the moment. The whole idea is to see how Africa can trade within itself. So we are going to interrogate all these scenarios and find out the emerging opportunities. Of course, we are not forgetting our retail and digital banking. We will double down. We will double down. So it's going to be a difficult year, but we think we'll be able to deal with the difficulties. We think we should be able to continue to ride the wave as the country and indeed the general world transition out of COVID. So we thank you very much for your questions and thank you for listening. On behalf of my team, we say a very big thank you and continue to look at investment in Zenith and continue to look at investment in the country. The country remains a very, very, a country that can guarantee substantial and very significant returns, especially with the tailwinds that we expect could drive activities in 2021. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude today's conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.